Oh, that was particularly fucking delicious. That last bit. Mmm.
What Matthew meant to say was season 4, episode 19.
Indeed, and welcome to Lug Radio.
I'm Jono Bacon.
I'm Adrian Bradshaw.
I'm Matthew Revell.
And he's gone.
He's wet himself.
And he's Stuart Langry.
What have we got on this show?
Welcome to the show.
So we'll be talking about the Red Hat Summit. I mean, not a lot, because we didn't really understand what happened. But
we weren't there. So it doesn't really matter.
To Mr.
Bradley M. Coon of the Software Freedom Law Centre about Microsoft declaring that Linux violates loads of patents.
Aha, yes.
Aha.
This week.
Have you been covered, Matt?
We're also going to have a chat about what you are mostly been...
This week.
What you are mostly been playing with, indeed.
Apart from your pennies.
Gary Pennies.
Gary Pennies.
So let's get on with the show.
Shall we try and get on with it?
Let's get it on the road.
Recently, I was listening to the Linux Action Show.
Excellent.
And they were interviewing a guy from Novell.
Did you just call him a splitter?
Yeah, for listening to the competition.
Oh, the irony.
Okay. No.
Continue.
Sorry. Oh, a bag of otter's noses.
Go on.
Anyway, at one point in the interview, the Novell guy starts talking about co-opetition, right? Much to the amusement of the Linux Action Guy.
He goes, about what?
Co-opetition.
Okay.
Pretty much what the interviewer was saying.
So Burton only found that quite
amusing. He did accuse him of...
No, it's not mean now.
He said,
what the fuck is co-opetition?
Well, that's pretty much what he said. I mean, he said, did you just make a word up? And he went, no, we've been talking about it at Novell for quite a while. It's pretty self-explanatory. It's a combination of cooperation and yet competition, where we all kind of, we have to compete, but we work together and we raise the overall level.
In a vertical market.
No.
So you say the
but it's actually, when you think about it, it is the, you know, quite a... It's the right thing to do, isn't
Sounds
it?
Like a load of left-wing bullshit to me.
Quite right, mate.
I'm fucking Tory boy.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big believer in the idea that Linux distros should see as their competitors other Linux distros. If you're Red Hat, stop thinking we will target Ubuntu users. If you're
Red
Ubuntu,
Hat would never do
if
that.
You're Ubuntu, stop thinking we'll target Red Hat
I'm
users
sure
or
would.
Target Novell users. I'm sure they would as well. In fact, to be quite honest with you,
may no flowers bloom.
Yeah, may a thousand
one big brown flower,
a little blue one as well.
If never 1,000 flowers blooming, we'll have 999 flowers die, and one brown flower blooming. I mean, but
am I the only one concerned at the words brown flower?
It's not the first one you've seen.
It does
your ass tulip.
It does seem dragging you back to the point slightly. It does seem a shame to me that the Linux distros see other Linux distro users.
Do you think they do? Honestly, think they do?
I think so.
Of course they do.
I mean, if you look at you remember Shuttleworth's comments about when OpenSUSE, when Novell did the deal.
I mean,
and they said OpenSUSE, why don't it come and work for Ubuntu? You know, I mean, that's trying to poach developers from there rather than users.
That was our boy Shuttleworth.
It was our boy Shuttleworth, isn't it? Not my boy Shuttleworth. I happen to run his product.
I'd say all distros definitely see other distros as competition. Because at the end of the day, they're businesses. And
okay,
although it doesn't...
But it's not exclusively just competition, is it? It is also a cooperation.
Oh, definitely. I mean, yeah. I'd say an engine...
It seems like a bullshit word.
I think it makes a lot of sense because all distros... do cooperate in some way. I mean, obviously some cooperate more than others, but people do collaborate in different ways.
You need to cooperate.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just that you need to cooperate. I mean, I was thinking there, a good example of this is, say, Matt Garrett working for Canonical, fixes some stuff to do with suspend and resume on someone's laptop. And
doesn't
then work fucking time.
And then harsh to Matt Garrett. And then it ends up...
I'm joking, Matt.
And then it ends up in Fedora, and it ends up in OpenSUSE, and perhaps OpenSolaris or whatever.
You can't avoid that.
But exactly, that's not necessarily because they want to cooperate, they're forced to by the terms of the GPL.
Yep.
So do you think they'd be... Do you think
we should have a quick straw poll, then. We should name all the distros and think whether they... What is it again? People, I forgot.
Cooperation
or just competition?
I think it's difficult to tell.
Let's name and shame.
We could do if you want, but I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I don't really know.
I wouldn't have a clue.
Well, of course not. We're just going to blatantly speculate.
What, on the radio?
So I mean, do you think do you think people at various distros will be inclined to cooperate for the good of the open source community, or do they just do it because they're obliged to under the terms of the license?
Well, we know that Novell sort of cooperate with Microsoft.
I think that it's the question's moot almost because
they didn't make a difference either way.
It wouldn't exist. No, I don't. The whole thing wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the system that forces them to cooperate in that way.
Well, then again, a useful study there might be things under a BSD license,
right?
Because you're not obliged to contribute those changes back. If you hack on,
you're thinking of Apple, aren't you?
No, I wasn't actually. I was thinking of Apache.
Oh, yeah.
There's only one Apache.
Oh, wow. There's only Apache. One Apache.
One Apache.
I thought it was Jasper Carrot.
I thought it was only an Apache license.
But yeah, but it's a BSD style license. Is the point. It doesn't require
in the style of
changing back in the style of the BSD.
I want a license in the style of a BSD.
But is there cooperation between BSDs in the same way?
I would fucking think so.
I'd imagine so. Yeah. I think most open source hackers basically want to cooperate with each other.
But what do you mean by cooperation is, I would see it as being that people go out of their way to make it easy for other distros to get their stuff and use it. Whereas at the moment, surely what's happening is that people are just forced to make it available, they don't necessarily go out of the way, and then people come along and use it because it's there.
I hate to think that they're only making it available because they're forced to.
Yeah.
Some of them are.
I think some are. I'd say it's a relative exception. I think most open source hackers really do want to cooperate, because at the end of the day, most open source hackers think wrong. And the thing we've also got to bear in mind is that sometimes things are explicitly different. So, for example, every distro has got their own kernel policy. So there is no, you know, most distros try to have their kernel policy. A kernel policy is kind of like how far away from upstream kernel they're going to diverge, because kernel changes an awful lot depending on the distro. Whereas if you have, let's say, OpenOffice, it won't diverge as much as the kernel will. So each distro rolls out their own kernel policy, and the head of the kernel team will specify that policy. So, for example,
is he the kernel of the kernel team?
He'd be the general of the kernel team. His second in command would be the kernel of the kernel.
So they're things, you know, they get the impression that most kernel people at distros will roll patches that are generic enough to go into the upstream back upstream, but obviously some things are so specific to that distro that it's
gotcha.
You can't really cooperate. So,
but cooperation to me sounds like you've got one distro and they set up a little team with another distro to specifically collaborate on something, and that doesn't really happen much.
I don't know. I suppose it depends on how you define the word cooperation.
Sending patches upstream is just what happens. It's not cooperation.
Not necessarily.
What happens.
Well, it depends. It depends on whether they're talking about cooperation as a special thing within the open source world, or cooperation because cooperation on just in the IT industry.
This is
real.
Pretty unique.
All
in
right,
the
so
open source world.
This competition thing. Then, what did he exactly explain what it meant?
Yes, he did.
Okay, cool. So check out the Linux Action Show.
I assume you're doing, you know, a rising tide raises
exactly.
All boats.
They all contribute. They all compete, but they work together, and overall, together, they actually raise the level.
I understand the theory. I mean, you do something cool that lets you steal a march on other Linux distros for 6 months, but then everyone else gets it, so...
But surely it's...
I don't think you mentioned that.
I mean, it's...
I'm assuming that's the sort of thing he's talking about.
Why not
about?
Isn't it more about specialising...
pond and release the and raise the level of the pond in general.
Well, that depends. I mean, that's not necessarily how it works. I mean, if you look at Upstart, for example... in order for someone else, Novell, say, to move their init system to use Upstart, which was developed for Ubuntu by Scott James Remnant, in order for them to do it, they've had to track the project right from the beginning, from the moment Remnant started thinking about it, which you can't do. By definition, Canonical are going to have a head start there.
Right.
In exactly the same way, if you look at a lot of Red Hat's server manipulation tools, which other distros don't have, you're still dropping to the command line to configure services.
Right, so what I was saying about specific collaboration is, for example, Scott is very keen to work with Debian to, if they want it, to have Upstart work in Debian. So that would be a specific effort by group of people to work with another group of people. Whereas just contributing things generally to the free software universe, yeah, I suppose it is broadly cooperation, but to me it's not this kind of... it doesn't fit in with this competition idea, which is more where...
I think it depends on where you define the word, because the thing is, what you're talking about is as if you're saying the way things are at the moment are basically what's expected to be a good citizen in the community, which is what we all think, you know. Yeah. But then you're saying, like, in your mind, the next level up where you actually specifically go out to cooperate with someone is essentially what that is. I get the impression, I haven't heard the interview, but I get the impression that Novella basically is saying... I get the impression that they've been kind of taken aback by just how this is the norm and this is the way things work, and Novell want to be a good citizen and they want to contribute in that way. Because
right.
That's, like Aid said, you know, it's something fairly unique to Open Source, you know. I mean, you don't... This doesn't really happen in the proprietary software world.
It's almost entirely unique to Open Source, because that's the point. You can't have this kind of cooperation in a proprietary software world, because it has to be... you get access to other things through defined interfaces, and you have to meet up and define those interfaces with your partners, which is exactly the discussion we had with Microsoft when we went down there a couple of years ago.
It could work at a proprietary level if you've got access to the source code, but it's under specific restrictions and so I can imagine in a games world. So I can imagine if games developers are writing PlayStation 3 games, I can imagine that they may make modifications to the tool chain that then get sent to Sony, and I don't know. You know what I mean? It could theoretically happen, but it doesn't happen as naturally.
It's very much a point-to-point cooperation is the point. It's cooperates with B. It's not what Matt was saying about throwing it out to the wider community.
And it's not such a bad bullshit marketing term as well.
No, that's the point.
Well done. Yeah. Good word. Cooperation.
Don't put it in a dictionary, though.
In the news over the last week or so, has been unless you're living under a rock or your aid, you will probably have noticed that Microsoft have said that Linux and Linux open source email clients and OpenOffice and so on violate an enormous number of their
235.
I thought it was 263 or so, whatever the number is. Anyway,
this is carrying on with it's undemocratic and it's a cancer. And
all the stuff that Microsoft swore blind they were not doing anymore.
Weren't
when we went
there
down to see
like
them.
Less than 12 months ago, and they were like, "Oh, we're different now."
Yeah, well, they have come out and said that Linux violates I think it's 263, but whatever, 263 of their patents. They haven't said what those patents are. And they have explicitly refused to say what those patents are, because then the open source community might fight against them or something.
Because they might have a leg to stand on.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Torvalds came back with, well, you know, if there are these patents and they've got them, then there's almost certainly prior art from the years and years of operating system development before
Microsoft
even came on
the scene. Since 1960 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Before patents went crazy.
The interesting question, there's been two reactions, I think, as far as I can tell.
Allergic reaction.
In the open source community. The first reaction has been...
Whatever,
you know, I'm sure they have they should either put up or shut up, you know.
Chrome will fill it.
Shit or get off
the pot.
It's
one of those patents displaying text in a window.
It's just, it wouldn't surprise me if it was, to be honest with you.
That's his paper size, this patent, isn't it?
It is, my generic, this is completely ridiculous patent is someone's probably got a patent on displaying text in a window. It's the sort of thing you get a software patent on.
If you know,
you are now in breach of Microsoft's patent, but she's not going to tell you which one it is, all right?
I mean, the question is...
What, fat bastards talking on a radio show?
We hold fire up.
I think Chris Moyle's got there before I did.
No, the patent isn't fat wankers talking on a radio show.
Oh, I see, that is central difference. I mean, the question is, do you think that they're going to sue, or is it just to threaten this credibly enough that large Linux, Fortune 500 Linux users or whatever, large companies who use Linux, are going to be just scared enough that it might happen that they'll just buy Microsoft indemnity.
It's a continuation of the FUD, and it'll do exactly that, won't it?
Well, the other interesting side to it is, I mean, this is what SCO did to a large extent, and it's basically killed SCO.
It's not going to kill Microsoft, though, is it?
It is a good point, because like since Novell have partnered with the devil, a lot of people are buying Linux stuff from Novell.
Buying it from Microsoft.
Buying
the Linux vouchers from Microsoft.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a credible threat. I mean, I wrote a blog entry about this today, and it's like...
No, you don't, but corporations might.
I don't know, because the thing is...
They do, because they're all buying their Linux through Microsoft now.
Well, maybe, but I'm talking about the actual threat of them making this kind of legal action, there's two issues: whether they're actually going to make the legal action, and the other issue is whether they'd succeed. I don't think they're going to make the legal action because I think there's so much shit which is standing in their way.
They're in enough legal trouble.
You know, yeah, I mean, they're a convicted monopolist. They're going to have looked at this SCO case and the shitstorm that's ensued. They're going to be looking at the fact that, you know, recently the...
I'm not a lawyer, by the way.
No, you need I think to people IA. Know that. You know, recently the Supreme Court has said that software patents are not as enforceable as they they think they may be, and a lot of them may be void because of it.
Right.
You know, there's so many issues here.
And also, who would you sue? Microsoft sue?
Well, that's the thing is that you know we
My
all know
sweet
that Linux users
ass is who they could
Linux
sue.
Users Linux users are pretty much untraceable. So you'd be basically going after distributed rollouts.
They're not untraceable. I mean. The four of us are untraceable, but Goldman
Sachs...
Well,
you say that.
How untraceable are they?
Goldman Sachs, for example. You know, I've got no idea whether they do use Linux in their data centre, but they're the sort of company who might do.
Yeah.
They won't be untraceable.
Yeah.
But suing your customers, or because they're likely to be Microsoft customers as well...
Well, that's the other thing, isn't it? Yeah, they're going to be Microsoft customers as well as Red Hat customers.
You see the companies like Red Hat and...
Well, it depends on the point of view. I mean, you say suing your customers is bad business, but the RIAA do it, and they don't think it's a bad idea.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it good business, just because they do it.
Well,
you might shit in a box, it doesn't mean that, you know.
But they obviously think it's a good idea. It's not so trivially a bad idea that everyone will run away from it.
I think it's a sufficiently bad idea that the Microsoft will run away from it. Because Microsoft are all about... Microsoft are all about big rollouts and partners. That's the core of their business. And they're not going to fuck off their partners because of a vague possibility that they could win an intellectual property battle.
But I don't think they have to fuck off their partners. If they can threaten credibly enough that there's going to be a problem, you'll get big companies to buy Linux indemnity insurance from Microsoft or buy vouchers from Microsoft use Linux. And at that point... It doesn't matter. They'll buy it just to be safe because they've got loads of money.
Yeah, I don't know.
And at that point, A, Microsoft get a cut of all the Linux stuff in the world, which means they're still making money.
Not all of it, just some small sections, so we don't lose.
But importantly, B, they're trying to move... You end up, in that kind of situation, you end up basically having to think of Linux as something that needs per-seat licensing. It gets rid of what makes our model different from the proprietary software model.
But the question you've got to ask is whether...
It only gets rid of it if it's applied universally, and it won't be.
Why won't it be?
Because they won't be able to win. The likelihood of them being able to win any court cases on this is very slim.
But they don't have to win any court case.
They do apply it universally. They do, don't they? None of the major Linux distributors, even imagine if all the major Linux distributors adopted a per seat licensing model and started sending money to Microsoft for every single one just to cover their asses, someone else will always come up and take the place.
But you don't go after the distributors, you go after the users.
Yeah, I mean,
take my firm.
Yeah, Microsoft's not going to attack every single potential.
No one's denying the fact that Microsoft don't have to have a legal contest against this to frighten people into paying money to protect themselves, right? And Novell have got an indemnity thing, and SCO did that thing as well.
The
question you've got to ask is to see how much of a threat it is whether people are actually buying these indemnification contracts. To be honest, I don't think they are.
They are, though.
They are. That's the point.
We don't know how many in the big scheme of
There's
things.
There's been some really big sales recently.
In the big scheme of things, we don't know.
On your hands and your toes, though, the number of sales have been.
You've only been able to buy them for 4 months.
Yeah. Bullshit! Novell have had their indemnification thing for about a year and a half.
The Novell Microsoft voucher deal, right, has only been around Novell, about 4 or 5 months.
Novell have had an indemnification policy that you can buy.
Yes, I agree.
At least a couple of years.
I agree with you, but before the Novell Microsoft deal, and before Microsoft did things like Linux violates our patents, it was in a straight case of do we think there's anything we need to be indemnified against? And it was reasonable. You might come up with the answer of no.
No, but
now, if you're a corporate counsel for a big firm and you say, do we think there's any reason we need to be indemnified? There's a much bigger chance you'll say yes, because Microsoft have said
the question is then, if one or two or even two dozen corporate entities buy these indemnification things, does that affect us and the rest of the Linux ecosystem?
I think the point is that it's Microsoft up to its old tricks again, when they keep telling us they've changed, but the lepers don't change the spots. Anyway, so wasn't the... I mean, did it turn out to be true, or has more information come to light now? Or?
Well, there was a thing recent. I mean, apparently the something we were reading about earlier on was that Bulmer apparently was referring to this report written by a guy called Dan Munter.
This is where he got his facts from, where he said...
Dan Ravipinto.
Like Ravature or something like that. Dan Ravature, who's the...
Who's Dan Ravipinto, then?
I think he's a cricketer.
He's with tomatoes.
Yeah. Nobody knows that. I may have just made his name up. Sorry, carry on.
Ravipinto.
Yeah, it's real.
Sounds
honestly.
Like a Fiat car.
But the report that they were quoting from.
Sorry, anyway, this guy, Dan Ravature, who I was actually sat next to in the airport when I came back from Brazil, and I got chatting to him, and he's a really nice guy, and he works for the Software Freedom Law Centre, and he's their patent expert. Mm. So he knows what he's talking about. Mm. And anyway, he wrote this report that Bulmer's referring to, and he claims that Bulmer's kind of like twisting it all out of proportion. He's got the wrong end of the stick when it comes to it. So, I mean...
Hang on, just before you go on.
Mm.
Steve Ballmer, head of Microsoft, is, to bolster his case that Linux is violating patents, is quoting a report written by the Software Freedom Law Centre.
As far as I'm aware, from what I was reading today, that Ballmer referred to an independent report written by Dan Ravature from the Software Freedom Law Centre.
Are we in Bizarro World or something?
Yeah. I'm surprised Microsoft didn't just commission someone to write a report. That's usually the way it works.
That happens.
Again. So in that case, we should probably talk to someone from the Software Freedom Law Centre to find out more about this.
I tell you what we should do, right? We should refer to his name correctly.
We should talk to Bradley M. Coon.
Yes.
Hi, Bradley. How's it going?
Pretty good. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good, good. Good to have you on the show. So, first of all, tell us what you do for a living. How do you earn your money?
Well, it might help to give a brief history of how things started for me in the free software nonprofit sector.
Yeah, go for it.
Many of your listeners may know that I was the executive director of the Free Software Foundation for about 5 or 6 years. One of the things we felt, Eben Moglen and I, who was one of the board members of the Free Software Foundation at the time, was that the services that FSF was doing, GPL enforcement, allowing projects to have administrative services and copyright assignments, and generally giving them legal advice through Evan, was something that not just the GNU project should have access to, but everybody in the open source and free software community should have equal access to those kind of services. So in early 2005, Evan decided to start this Software Freedom Law Center, which is... the thing that I work at now, to help bring these services in pro bono way to all these open source and free software projects that are out there.
Oh, really?
Fantastic. So, I mean, day-to-day kind of stuff that you work on. Let us know the kind of day-to-day stuff.
I have a couple of different roles that I play around here. The first is I'm the chief technology officer of the Software Freedom Law Center, and that job entails a couple of different things. I'm responsible for all the internal technology, and since we're a small place, I do some software development, some system administration, as well as sort of making long-term plans for our own internal technology, and we're releasing actually some of our stuff soon out as free software as well, of course. And I also act somewhat as a liaison between the free software development community and the lawyers here. So I sometimes end up translating between lawyerese and hackerese. I'm pretty much the only non-lawyer in the team on staff here, so I do a lot of that work of sort of explaining the sometimes craziness of the free software world to the lawyers that I work with.
Sounds like a fun job, to be honest with you. Speaking of someone who works for a law firm, I understand how difficult it is. a question then, since we were talking about the Microsoft announcement about patents before we called you up. And what's the reaction been inside the SFLC?
Well, I think this is something that certainly we've expected for a number of years. Microsoft has always been looking for a way, since basically 2001, back when I was at FSF, to stop free software. When I first started FSF was right at the time when Microsoft started that un-American cancerous virus campaign. They thought it would be a quick kill, right? They thought they would spread some FUD around and that suddenly, you know, open source and free software would go away. But of course, we survived that. And in fact, it actually was a big boom for our own marketing and getting the word out there because people thought this couldn't be true and actually started looking at free software systems because of it. And then there was the whole SCO debacle, which was basically Microsoft bankrolling and a sort of FUD campaign against open source and free software. It turns out that case didn't really have any any bass to it, and it's sort of finishing its way out and play and ending like all lawsuits do, slowly but surely. And this is sort of the next step in that kind of campaign of trying to terrorize the free software world with this sort of thing. Certainly, you know, we think that we're glad that we're here to be able to help defend the free software community, which with whatever may come up. And of course, one of the ways we're doing that is by representing FSF as they build the GPLv3, which has a number of terms in it to try to deal with situations about patent licensing agreements and cross-licensing agreements that could hurt free software.
All right, so is everyone over there suiting up for battle, or do you think, would you like to see the free software community just ignore it because it's not really worth dignifying with an answer?
I think it's somewhere in between those two things. I think that certainly we should be paying attention and making sure that we're prepared, but I don't think that it's good. If it turns out to be a battle, it's not going to be a quick one. It's going to be a slow one. Microsoft's a big company with a lot of resources, and if they wanted to outspend us indefinitely, they probably could. So it's not a situation where you want to respond too quickly. Being a non-lawyer, sort of working among lawyers, I've learned this lawyer tendency to wait and see what happens. I think that's a really good thing that lawyers have to teach free software people. It's just sort of wait and see what happens. You know, wait and see what the other side does before you commit yourself to any given strategy.
And recently, there's with the Microsoft patent news recently, there was some report that Dan, I don't know how to pronounce his surname, Dan Ravitcher or
Ravitcher?
Yeah, Ravitcher. That they referred to his report, and he felt that it was misinterpreted. I mean, do you know the scoop on that, or is he the best person to speak to?
Oh, sure I do. I've worked with Dan for a number of years. He was a pro bono counsel back when I was FSF, and he's one of my colleagues here. His office is just two doors away from mine here at SFLC. We're also poker buddies as well. He did a piece of work for a small organization that was trying to start up to be sort of an insurance firm for open source and free software, and they hired him to do a one-off kind of job, to just do a quick analysis of a couple of things. And a lot of people point to that work that Dan did as some sort of bad thing that happened. It's sort of just a non-event in a lot of ways. The patents are out there whether you know about them or not, and he just identified a few that may or may not be infringed on by Linux. Just ones that people should take a look at. Now, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't really comment on the legal details, but I think generally, as far as a PR thing, I think it's not something to be too worried about. Of course, like Microsoft or somebody else might point to that as something to say. See, even people in the free software world say these things, but there are probably patents that read all over all different kinds of free software things. The patent office is incentivized to grant patents, at least in the United States, and it's true in other countries as well. So they get money every time they grant a patent. They're told to do it very quickly, so they don't really give full review. So many, many, many of the patents that are currently on the books in the United States are probably not valid. And one of the things that Dan does he's involved with another organization called the Public Patent Foundation. He's done a lot of interesting things, filing re-exams of bad patents. He's mostly focused in the Public Patent Foundation side on medical patents and those sort of things. But the same sorts of activities are important to software. He actually filed a re-exam through PubPat on the Microsoft FAT file system patent, which you guys may remember they were touting around a while back. So I think there's probably more of that to come.
So moving on from that, what else do the SFLC do? I mean, do you run campaigns and that kind of thing to look at particular things, or do you just wait for legal work from the free software community to come to you?
We're not an advocacy organization, so we don't really run campaigns. We are a nonprofit, and in the United States, we're registered as 501c3, which is sort of the top level of nonprofit in the U.S. And what we primarily do is sort of the second thing you said. We wait for free software projects to come to us. Sometimes we reach out to them if it looks like they need help, and give them legal advice and give them administrative services. One of the things I've always done in the free software world is a lot of people like to walk up to free software and pick the sexiest problem they can find. I want to hack on this because it's the most exciting, thrilling thing to work on. I've always sort of said, well, what's most needed? I've always felt that the best thing to work on was the thing people needed most, which is often the least sexy thing. So a lot of what SFLC does, and this also applies to the a separate organization that we've started from within SFLC and spun off called the Software Freedom Conservancy, is provide administrative services to projects. So through the Software Freedom Conservancy, which is affiliated with SFLC, we do things like manage bank accounts for projects. We accept donations for them so that they can get donations from the public and have it 501c3 tax deductible in the U.S. And all the sort of boring things they don't want to do. Pretty soon we're going to start accepting copyright assignments for those projects that would like to have their copyright held in a tight single location. So those kinds of things, and it's really not the most fun work in the world, but it's really necessary for projects to be able to run smoothly. We want the coders to be out there coding as much as they like and not have to worry about these administrative things that need to be done, okay, but are not the most fun to do.
Right, so you said you do all your work pro bono, which is for free.
Yep.
Have you got enough people on staff to deal with all the questions that come in? I mean, if I've got a legal problem in a project and I come to you, are you likely to say, yes, we'll help you, or are you likely to say, no, we're too busy?
Well, we've focused on accepting projects that have somewhat of a high profile. You know, every week or so we get an email from somebody saying, hey, I'm about to start a project and I want to talk to you about all these legal questions. And those we tend to turn down only because we want to see some code first, right? If you're just talking about something, that's not really writing free software. But anything that's pretty well established, we've generally been able to accept and do the work for the organizations or the projects that come to us. The funding we get is primarily from the industry at the moment, and they've realized that it's really helpful to them to have a clear legal infrastructure.
Yeah.
Our first round of funding came right after the SCO case, and the companies who rely on open source and free software as part of their business came to realize they really needed a place that was third party, that was not affiliated with any company or any existing organization, that could provide these kinds of services to projects and get their legal needs met. So we have about 9 people on staff now, and we've been able to ramp pretty well up to the demand that's come forward. As it turns out, a lot of legal questions are relatively easy to answer. We spend a lot of time on the hard ones, but we can handle the volume because most of them are easy ones.
How much does it cost to run something like that, and do you solicit donations from, you know, the average free software fan?
Hi, I'm sorry, I missed part of that question.
I said, I'm having some trouble with the microphone here. I was just wondering, how much does it cost to run an organisation, your organisation, and do you solicit donations from ordinary free software users?
Well, as far as how much it costs, I'd probably have to refer to our public filings. Of course, as a charity in the United States, we're required each year to publish what our budget is and so forth. And since I don't do the finances, I don't want to start quoting numbers and turn out to be wrong. So people can go onto a site like GuideStar in the U.S. and GuideStar.com and check. You know, the details of our finances. Sure. But as far as what was the second part? I'm sorry.
Do you solicit from...
Sorry, do you look for donations from ordinary free software fans?
Oh, yes, of course. As a charity, we certainly accept donations. They're tax deductible if you pay United States taxes up to as permitted here in the U.S. So we certainly accept them. We haven't really focused on that style of fundraising because it is expensive to run a law firm, and we don't want the whole burden to be carried by the community. We think that the industrial partners do have a responsibility to help
indeed,
fund this kind of work, and we don't want them to say, well, great, if you get all this money from hackers, we don't have to give you any money anymore, and that would be a pretty sad thing. But we are interested, if people feel like they like the work we're doing, that we have a PayPal link on our site and encourage people to donate.
And where can we find that site?
It's softwarefreedom.org, all one word.
Superb. Well, look, Bradley M. Kuhn, what does the M stand for?
Michael.
Wonderful.
Oh, that's really boring.
Yeah.
I share middle initial with Richard Stallman, as it turns out.
Lucky you.
I wanted it to be Matilda.
Yeah, we wanted it to be something more exotic, like Merkin or something. Yeah.
Not that interesting.
All right, well, thank you very much, Bradley. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Keep up the good work.
Best of luck with everything that you're doing there.
Yeah.
Yep, and I hope that if there's any free software projects listening that need some help, they should certainly get in touch.
Excellent.
Nice.
Excellent.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. Hasta la vista.
Earlier in the week, Chris Blizzard from Red Hat.
Is that his real name?
It is. Well, I assume it's his real name.
Perhaps it's pronounced Blizzard.
He sounds like somebody out of a fucking metal band.
He does.
Christoph Blizzard.
In the band Conquest of Steel. Which is Chris Mills' band, Maypress.
Derek Youngblood.
Anyway, for a change, we're talking about Red Hat. Anyway, so sorry, carry on.
Yeah, sorry, we're talking about Red Hat. He wrote up a summary of some of the things that were announced at the Red Hat Summit.
Oh. Shame I missed it.
Some of which were actually quite interesting, like the fact that they've put together and, well, they've commissioned and had released a set of fonts.
Yeah, the Liberation fonts.
The Liberation fonts.
Mathematically identical faces. To... Well, if you want. It's just a longer word for the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
Is it not?
Yeah. No, typefaces, you know...
And a font's where you drown babies, right?
That's it.
The idea is they are drop-in replacement for the Microsoft fonts.
Yes.
So I downloaded them and I installed them and that was cool.
Good on Red Hat for that.
Good on Red Hat. There's not many companies giving away fonts, which is quite good.
No.
Because they take fucking ages to make. They really are
very
to make.
Talented as well, don't you?
We've got the Bitstream fonts.
Yes.
Bitstream Vera and that kind of thing. So, I mean, we're starting to build up a selection of genuinely free fonts rather than just free to download.
It can't be
not.
Only fonts that came out of the summit.
No.
Very
no,
good.
No.
Bored. Can move on.
Right, okay. Fonts are good. It's good to have
fonts are good. They're just boring as well.
Something else they did, they talked about moving to an online desktop, didn't say online desktop, and it's all very hazy what
and
exactly
does anybody actually
about.
Know what the fuck that means?
Well, no. Apparently they were misquoted or misunderstood.
Yeah. Misunderstood as saying the desktop is dead, which they're not saying, but they haven't said
but
what
they are
saying.
They're not particularly clear in what they are saying. Yeah.
So when we say they, we mean Chris Blizzard on his blog.
Yeah. But
well, he links to stuff, but even if you follow the links, you don't really
the impression
understand.
I get
what the hell is Red Hat doing? That's the thing.
They're being rather hand-wavy. But one of the things that they are doing is putting together a distribution which they intend to only... They don't intend to let you download
this is
it.
In cooperation with Intel and some new sort of hardware,
distro,
isn't it?
Then.
Yeah, it's basically a distro which you'll only be able to get if you buy a machine with it
it's
on.
It's pre-installed.
Not
yeah.
much new there, then.
But
nothing particularly interesting, then.
But the question is, I mean... That's a fairly big change. If you go to Dell and get Dell's Ubuntu... Then you'll get Ubuntu that you can download. What's going to be...
Not necessarily. I don't know the specifics of the Dell deal with Ubuntu, but you know what it's like when you get Windows on a machine, you get all that crap with it as well.
Yeah, but that's you Windows get... with extra stuff bolted on.
No,
yeah.
This is the opposite. This is stripped down.
Sure, but...
other people to add stuff
it's not particularly new, a distro making a specific version of their distro for OEM.
Do you think it's a good idea?
Personally, I don't think it's a good idea, because I'd like it to have a stock Ubuntu or a stock Red Hat or whatever on there, but...
I would like it to have a stock.
It depends on the hardware. It depends on whether it's like, if it's going to be an embedded device or a mobile, a mid, then...
What's a mid?
Mobile internet device. That's what Intel are calling their new form factor.
Oh my god.
So, you know, if it's
so
like...
my phone is a mid.
No.
No.
It's mobile, it can connect to the internet, and it's a device. Why is it not a mid?
Moving on. So, yeah, so I mean, for kind of specific applications like OLPC or the Classmate PC or something like that, I can see it being kind of customised.
What do we think about the price of that doubling, by the way, that OLPC stuff?
Going up to $175 from $100.
What's all that about?
It's kind of expected, I'd say, but... it's expensive building a fucking custom piece of hardware.
They
will recoup the cost at some point.
Jim Gettys from the OLPC project says that... not he's a sturdy bloke. he said that he was quoted as saying right from the beginning of the project they always said it would be $100 eventually, not necessarily $100 from day one.
Yeah.
It's my understanding of the thing that
aren't they now be saying it's going to be $175?
It's going to be $175 now, but it's supposed to be $100 later. I assume once they've smoothed out problems in the manufacturing
once
process.
You buy it on eBay, a better excuse would have been. It's $100 Australian or something like that.
$100 Australian is about £4.
And do you make him think to the rumours that it's only going to be that much extra because the spec's gone up
because
so they can run Windows?
Well,
allegedly.
You're not the first person to make that accusation, which they have strenuously
denied. I know they have. Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. That would be a huge betrayal of everything they stand for.
Yeah,
But going back to the...
Well, what happened with the view source key?
Which apparently isn't in there.
Isn't it?
We're straying from the Red Hat Summit.
But there was nothing to say about the Red Hat Summit. It was a nice, you know, smooth over.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'd say that in terms of OEMs having custom versions, yeah, I mean, it's kind of part and parcel of the way things work. I think it'd be nice if most general purpose OEMs, so for example, like with the Dell deal, something like that, general purpose computers come with their stock distro instead of a weirdo customized version.
It depends what you mean by stock. I mean,
well. Ubuntu.
Reading the article, it's as though there's going to be sort of special hardware that Intel are coming out with, and this is going to be written to run with that.
It'll be interesting to see whether, if it's all free software, there's nothing stopping some people buying one of these devices, taking it off the device, and then distributing it on a CD for people if they want it. Whether it's useful to people on a CD because it only works on that hardware.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting. The thing I'm curious about, I think it's fascinating that Red Hat don't seem to particularly communicate very well what this so-called online... They've said that they're going to be kind of... Their focus is going to be on online applications. That seems to be the inspiration from the article, but I don't...
You particularly like online applications,
The impression the impression I got... And
you know
again,
online
they've not been very
is.
Clear.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
No, not necessarily. I don't think they're talking about applications that exist entirely online. I think they're talking about a tighter integration between the desktop applications and online things that you've got.
Active desktop.
So... Well, I was thinking more in terms of being able to seamlessly save things to the web, and that sort of thing. But
who knows? As you say, they didn't communicate it very well.
It is enormous.
It's amazing. I mean, Red Hat seemed to do this. Like when Mugshot first came out, no one knew what that was either.
What do you mean when it first came out? I mean, do you know what it is now?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you?
Yeah.
How would you describe Mugshot in 10 words?
Give us its elevator pitch.
I can't do it. I'm a Mugshot user.
I'd say it's an aggregator of content.
Aggregator of social networking hand wavy stuff.
It's an aggregator of content. It brings together my Flickr stuff, my MySpace stuff, my blog line, whatever the hell it is. It brings it all together.
MySpace.
Fucking MySpace.
It's all so
Dad's
unfair.
Pants in the middle of your role.
This week, I are mostly been. I've been playing with Tilda.
That didn't work.
Your home directory.
No.
Tilda Swinton.
Some rice.
No.
That book about the girl who can move things with her thoughts.
That's Carrie.
Carrie.
What? Oh, no, hang on, is she the one who can set things on fire?
Yes!
Both of the above. Anyway.
Matilda.
Right, sorry, that joke died on his arse, didn't it?
Yeah, because I'm in a room with full of...
I've had a stroke!
Hello there!
Right,
hello.
Yeah.
Hello, moving
swiftly on.
What's Tilda?
Tilda is a drop-down terminal.
Oh, that thing I've seen.
Okay,
that.
What do you mean?
What it is...
I do apologise.
I'll start again. I don't like opening terminals. I try and avoid a situation where I need to.
It's so annoying, isn't it, having to open a terminal?
Yeah, because
there should be a key press for it.
It is. Every time
no, it isn't.
Every time I open a terminal, I feel like I've failed a bit because I shouldn't have to do that.
Alt F2.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I have to run things, fine, but whatever.
Oh, that's okay.
Do you honestly think that each time you have to open a terminal that it's a bad thing?
Yes.
Every time I open a terminal, I feel more of a man.
I do. However, I am aware that I still have to do it.
Okay.
But quite often I'll need to pop up a terminal just to run one or two commands and then shut it back down again. And it's annoying to have to go applications menu, start terminal, wait 3 or 4 seconds for it to pop up, run
the
command.
Have you not got an icon on your bar?
Well, I could put an icon on my bar, but that would be admitting defeat.
Ah, right.
It was my original thought.
I did that ages ago.
Yeah.
It's the first thing I do when I get a new system.
An illustrative point here, by the way, people. But because I need to pop up a terminal, run a couple of commands, shut it back down again, what Tilda does, it runs in the background. And then you bind a key to it, you press F2. And it pops down a terminal at the top of the screen, which is the full width of the screen. No window borders or anything.
Right.
And then F2 makes it vanish again.
Okay.
And that's it. It's just
doesn't
really...
Doesn't Control or Alt F2 do the similar thing?
What does Control Alt F2 do?
Takes you to the other sessions.
I could do that, but then I'd have to log into them. And I'd lose what I was looking at on the screen.
So when you load your terminal up, it's already like a terminal.
Yeah, the idea behind it, it's apparently inspired by a terminal in Quake. Apparently if you're playing Quake, you get a little drop-down thing you can type into.
No, it does sound useful. I'm looking into it.
There are two of them. There's one called Yakuarki, and there's one called Tilda.
Apt-get
install Yakuarki. Install Tilda.
Now,
I went with Tilda because I can spell it, and because I couldn't get Yakuarki to work. But they're both apparently inspired by this terminal in Quake, however that works. But it's just a really...
So how do you get to fold back up again, did you say?
Just press F2 again.
Yeah.
So if you need to run a couple of bars, just F2 type thing. No, basically no overhead. And it can be transparent and stuff like that.
Sexer.
Yeah, but you know, whatever. Whatever, I
I don't care. And it doesn't, as far as I can tell, it doesn't do proper transparency. It does that bullshit fake transparency where it puts your desktop background on it, even if you're
in Beryl, mate. That's not good enough for me.
Well, you might find that it talks to Beryl if you've got Beryl running, which I haven't.
That's just a blatant guess, isn't it?
Hang on.
It is a blatant guess, but it's the sort of thing they would have done. Yeah. They're interested in this terminal being this kind of semi-transparent.
It's like it has all the usual command line history and all the rest of that.
It's just a terminal.
It's actually Bash.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a window in which Bash appears, in exactly the same way that GNOME Terminal is a window in which Bash appears. Yeah, it's just really useful.
Well, they get cool.
It seems like a very small, pointless application.
Sounds really useful.
Got that in one. Yeah.
But I actually found it really useful.
Good.
So that's what I are mostly been playing with
fantastic.
For the last...
Fantastic.
Well
for,
done.
For actually, for about the last 6 months. But that's when we started this segment, and we keep inviting guest presenters who get in before I do to talk about software.
Ooh, next. We'll speak to Adam in a minute.
Jono's next.
Ooh, I haven't got anything this week, but we'll leave it till next week.
But yes, there you go. Tilda.
Should we install it? Cubase right. For you, Jono.
I love Cubase. I also hate freedom.
Sadly, the end of yet another momentous show.
Indeed.
Mental
show.
onto the trampoline. I mean, the emails. And dear official Guadec Media Partners.
Hey, oh, indeed. Yes.
Pimpage, please. Is the request.
Yeah, go to Guadec.
Fair play. No, we ought to talk a bit more about this.
Go to Guadec in Birmingham.
Yes, so go over to www.guadec, that's GUADEC.org/press. Contains a press release all about Guadec, the dates, the location, etc., etc.
For those...
And by the way, Jono, send me a logo of for promotional material. Yes, the one that Jomo promised me weeks ago when Popey poked him at UDS. Yikes, that sounds painful.
Weeks ago.
That was last week.
Okay. Well, I'm reading the email.
We have a certain amount of difficulty sending a Lug Radio logo because we don't have a Lug Radio logo.
What?
Other than the one that we used at Guadec last year, which was the little old-fashioned radio, which Jono made up in 10 seconds.
No, no, it was
what about the red thing?
The one last year was the flaming text.
Flaming testicles. Yeah. Anyway, that's the request from Aidan Delaney.
Yes, so Guadec is the GNOME User and Developers European Conference.
What fantastic European country is it in this year?
It's in our fantastic European country.
10 miles down the road. It's going to be wicked. We'll all be there.
We will.
You can get the number 62 bus from my house.
That's useful info for people travelling from fucking Azerbaijan to Guadec.
Yes,
go to Guadec. It'll be cool.
Should go this way. We're
official media partners.
And we're official media partners, so there'll be shows
again
from Guadec.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
We are.
Oh, right.
We threw them some money.
Okay, we've had an email from Matt House.
Hey.
Most boring name ever. There's no
Hugh
comedy
Laurie
potential there.
What? No, he's not Hugh Laurie.
Huge Laurie.
Miserable bastard.
Huge Laurie. Cheeky concession for Lug Radio Live 2007.
Grab
Hi,
it.
Guys. Are you still taking concession applications for Lug Radio Live?
Oh, we are?
Yes, indeed we are. If you are, I'd like to apply for one, but not only one, but two.
Oh, cheeky.
Cheeky.
Cheeky bastard. Is that allowed?
Not only am I bringing my Ubuntu-using, metal-loving weirdo like our very own Jono, but I'm also bringing my ninja girlfriend. Shock horror, a girl.
She's actually a pucker ninja.
Concession for the ninja girl. For any Ubuntage.
If she's an actual ninja, no problem at all.
Ubuntage.
Ubuntage.
Go
on, you can have a concession.
All right, yeah.
What was the reason, though?
His girlfriend is a ninja, and he's got a metal-loving Ubuntu-using friend. What more do you need?
So who gets the concession, him or the two freaks?
But he's asking for both.
I suspect the two freaks, as you so eloquently put it, get the concession. He pays a full £5.
He pays a full £5. I am going to attempt to have the registration stuff up at some point in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, no, I've misread it. He says, not only am I an Ubuntu-using metal-loving weirdo.
Oh, so he's the weirdo.
He's the metal-loving weirdo.
Right, okay, metal-loving weirdo.
And his girlfriend, who is a ninja-loving shock horror girl. No.
What?
A toxic shock girl, he said.
Suicide girl.
Oh, right.
With shock horror girl. Three chins.
What? Are you warbling on? Yes, you can have a concession.
Warbling on? Even a word.
Warbling?
No, I want a brand new combine harvester.
Do you have an email for us?
I do. Some bloke.
Is he Chinese?
Yeah, some bloke whose name's Nacho, actually.
Some young guy.
Honestly.
Nacho Libre.
No. Okay. Writes in to bollock me, apparently.
Good. So I like him already.
Thank you, people.
I got a concession.
I just wanted to tell Ike that he should stop playing victim with free 3D driver issues.
Yes.
Because if he hasn't got them, it's his fault. There's great free driver support for Intel chips and old ATI Radeon chips. So basically, instead of whining about how there are no free drivers for you, you should have chosen to buy hardware with these chips.
Yes.
Which you are knowledgeable enough to have known. I've got 2 points here. First of all, I fucking know that now, don't I? And secondly, I saw there was a Radeon driver and thought, aha, Radeons are supported, this card's got a Radeon in it. It didn't occur to me it only supported some Radeons. Now I know, thank you very much, I get beaten once a week about it by Jono. I don't need it from you as well.
Fuck yeah, God. We should clarify that the Ging man, when he was choosing to buy his laptop, spent quite some time trying to find a laptop that had free driver hardware, and ended up buying a laptop with the most proprietary piece of wireless hardware you can buy in it.
I know. I must confess,
spectacular failure there.
It was a spectacular failure. I looked and went, okay, it's got an ATI Radeon card in it. There's a Radeon driver in X.org, and it's got
Broadcom. I'll be all right.
Got Broadcom wireless. And look, there's a BCM43XX driver for Broadcom wireless card. So I thought, it must be okay then.
Chinoy.
Now I admit, I know different.
The Broadcom driver's got one line of code.
Surely the point of his email was that you should know better to research this stuff.
Well,
which you obviously didn't research. You weren't good enough because you now know it
now. No, you're
Matthew
right. I didn't. So
I thought Radeon was like washing powder.
He says you can still get one of these cards for your desktop and very cheaply too, which I believe you, but I don't have a desktop. I have a laptop.
Washing machines,
you can't bears, stuff.
Bang the arse out of it.
If we all bought only the hardware that was supported, maybe the manufacturers would notice and open up, which is perfectly the truth.
I agree with that. Yeah,
and next time, I will be a lot more careful about it.
Good man. Yes,
onwards and upwards.
Was there indeed.
A P flying there?
P.
Okay, so William Manley.
The P speaks.
Excellent.
Writes in with...
I'm too manly. I take tablets for it. It's great. Carry on.
Some of us are so manly we have to take steps to de-manlify. Hi guys, I had a really weird dream last night featuring you guys minus Ack.
Ack wouldn't fit into the dream.
Thank you.
As far as I can remember, me and a mate of mine had hijacked your galleon and were offloading wooden crates of stuff onto a desert island. It seems that we were real life pirates, right? Although you were in a dream.
Like Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, we even had the costumes, but you guys didn't. The crates mainly contained strong liquor and perfume, which we put in a vault. So there are loads of rubbish little details here that are just unnecessary. I remember thinking in the dream that there
was
weren't
Was Keira Knightley in it?
Huh?
Was Keira Knightley in this pirate dream?
No, but she was... I remember thinking in the dream that there weren't enough of you, but I couldn't work out who was missing. When I woke up, I thought, of course, it was Ack. That is
ta-da,
all.
Solved when you woke up.
Thanks, Will Manley.
Do you feel disappointed that you weren't in that dream, Ack?
Not in the slightest.
I wonder where he was instead.
I missed you.
One of the few times I've wanted to be Ack.
I'm glad you three fucking weirdos are in some other weirdo's dream. Enjoy that.
I could squash my buckle. Anyway. Moving on.
then you can do your ironing on the chest.
It's swash my buckle, not swash my buckle.
Squash buckling.
I'm a squash buckler.
Are you five?
Thomas C. writes in from Boston Post.
Secret name.
And he said, all the people who are writing in to bitch about Lug Radio, about ignoring Solaris and BSD, etc., they need to piss off. Lug in Linux user group, they want to hear about BSD or something else other than Linux, they should start their own damn podcast. Love the show. Wish it was cheaper to get to the UK so I could get to LRL.
Well, I completely agree with him on everything apart from the fact that please don't say we're called Lug Radio and that stands for Linux User Group, because the Lug people bollock us every time someone suggests.
Yep. We're lesbian until graduation.
Screw them, guys.
Lesbian until graduation. Wow. Is that an actual acronym?
Yeah, there's a Wikipedia in it, mate.
Oh, for God's
must be true,
sake.
Then.
Excellent. Yeah. you, Baconio.
Okay, we've had an email from everybody's favourite Jacosia hacker, Laszlo Pandy.
Danish printed on you.
Sorry?
Nothing.
Okay. hi guys, it's Laszlo, aka the guy who's doing the Jocosha talk at LRL. Like he needs to fucking introduce himself.
We know who you are, Laszlo.
Laszlo. And he says, this is my entry for the Get High with Linux contest. So as a recap,
is it better than standing on a slide?
Yes, it is. I mean, as a recap, we've got this...
In the lowest country in Europe.
We've got this competition in which we want you to get as high as possible with Linux. You can interpret that in any way you like. The previous entry was from... Was from... How did you refer to him earlier on?
Ken Fallon.
No. How did you refer to him earlier on?
Ken.
How did you refer to him earlier on?
I can't remember.
How did you refer to him earlier on?
I might have called him Ken Hom. It was an accent.
The wok guy. Wok and woll. Anyway, he says, I couldn't help but notice that the highest building in my area was taller than the current 3 metre high leader of the contest in the Netherlands. I went up to the SkyPod, which is... isn't that the thing in the background of Compass?
Oh, I thought it was that thing that you could buy off of Apple.
That's like Sky Dome.
It's that thing in Frasier, isn't it, in the titles? The thing with the flashing light on it.
Ah, right, okay. Frasier. The SkyPod level...
In Canada, Frasier?
No, that's Seattle.
Just ignore Ravel. SkyPod level of the CN Tower in Toronto, where they claim it's the highest observation deck in the world. It is 447 metres. That's 1,456 feet
above
the ground. I feel
thinking about it.
The sun was very bright that day, and my laptop screen is pretty dim, but hopefully you can see that, that it's free software running very high up. Two pictures are attached, and there are links to the high-quality
video. That's going to a fair amount of effort.
So far, we've got 447 metres above sea level?
Yeah, 447.
No.
Surely that's above ground. 523 metres above sea level.
There you go. So 523 metres to beat to get high with Linux.
Crikey. Only just beat Ken Fallon's entry. So,
how is it actually possible to get any higher than that?
Yes.
Well, yeah, you go up Mount Everest.
Mount Everest.
Start.
Well, that's it, 0 feet above ground level. I know.
Shut up.
You've got a point. It is the ground.
Yeah.
That's how they measure it. Mountains are a figment of people's imagination, aren't they?
So Laszlo's the current winner. We're going to have this open for one more, for another couple of weeks.
Where's
until the next episode.
I can't climb Mount Everest in 1 week.
Well, no,
two
but...
weeks.
Get a fucking wriggle on.
But there's no reason, but there's no reason why you couldn't be on a plane, for example.
Or
halfway up a mountain. What's wrong with
how are you going to get the altimeter?
We're not supposed to be thinking of ideas.
Yeah, good point. Fuck you. Think them up yourself.
I mean, if you pull an altimeter and a laptop out on the plane, people start getting nervous.
Good point and well argued.
Yep, either that or a bomb. One of the two. next.
Email here from Christian Clare, who says, I just saw this news. Apple are releasing their kernel sources for macOS X 10.4.7 back to the community. And they're releasing the iCal server. Under the Apache license.
Good work.
So, finally, an open LCAL server. They always use so much open source material that it's about time they put some back. But, you know, good work.
Good point, well made.
Yeah. I mean...
Good work.
I don't think there's any discussion there. That's just, well done, Apple. We want to see more of that. Thank you very much.
We actively encourage that.
Yes,
because,
completely.
You know, Apple care what we think.
they do. Thank you very much, Apple. Cheers.
L.L. Ravel.
We have a number of emails bashing us for releasing Season 4, Episode 17, and then Season 4, Episode 27 immediately afterwards.
Now, so, who's to blame for that? Let's point some fingers.
Yes.
There you go.
This was, in 4 years, the first time I've let Bacon release the episode on his own.
I've released an episode before.
And unfortunately, he needs proper adult supervision in order to do this.
That's because it's the most convoluted fucking process to release an episode.
Who architected that then? Let me guess.
Who could it be? Oh, that's right, it's McNonad's
So, let me get this right. You had to take the number 16, add 1 to it, and got 27, and that's my system's fault.
So, thank you.
It's error checking, Ak. It's error checking.
Ah, right. Yeah, beard.
Chris Fletcher sums it up very nicely. Lug radio equals time travelling wankers.
Well, he's not wrong.
Yeah, I apologise. I apologise for fucking that up, and I also apologise for the lateness of the last episode as well.
Which is also all your fault.
Yeah. You, incidentally, Captain Bald. Captain Baldurin. I've got nothing to say at this point.
It's a fair point, yeah.
Have you got any more emails?
Is that the end of the emails?
No, I haven't got any more emails. Matt's going again.
Yeah, why not?
A man of your age.
Daryl343 at hotmail.com says, want to use my portal system for your site?
Oh.
I've been looking for communities who might benefit from my PHP content management system. Lug Radio has quite a few users in the forum, so I thought I'd extend an offer to try and get my work out there and appreciate it so others can find
it. Okay, cool. What's the URL?
Thanks.
Normally, I sell licenses, but as I'm just trying to get started, I thought I'd offer sites who seem like potential customers a free license to get things rolling.
Closed source software.
Well, fuck you, buddy. So yes, that's that really.
Okay, cool.
Matthew Revelle's views don't represent those of
The bloke writes for us to say, would you like to pimp some closed source software?
No, the guy's, I mean, yeah, we're not going to use it because it's closed source, but it's hardly fuck you, buddy, is it?
Roger Light says that he'd like us to pimp GPG key signing at LRL.
Yes,
go
let's
to
do
the
that.
Wiki, add
yes.
your name, okay. blah, blah, blah.
Apparently, if you're interested in GPG, you can get your key signed at Lug Radio.
As long as you bring photographic evidence that you are who are, you are, you are, etc., etc.
That was.
Does anyone fucking care about key signing? Why do we have to care?
You lot don't.
Not I. Anyway, we have some sad news. Before we have sad news, Lug Radio Live.
It's not.
They make me feel really happy. And then make me feel sad.
Great happy news! Lug Radio Live is coming on the 7th and 8th of July.
2007.
Things are going to plan. We've got the exhibition currently in the works. We've got loads of boffs coming through. We want more boff sessions, so get in touch with show at lugradio.org if you're interested in
that. And we want
boff.
More exhibition stuff as well.
Yep.
So if you're interested in exhibiting, contact show at lugradio.org. We're looking for interesting, cool exhibition stuff, not just are we like a table and give CDs out. We want you to do cool things.
Indeed.
So let us know what you want to do in the exhibition.
So Lug Radio Live's coming. Keep an eye on the website, which is lugradio.org/live. You can see all the latest information on there. We're going to be opening up ticket sales very, very soon.
We are.
The schedule's on there, so it's all good. So, with a heavy heart, how are we going to do this?
You step onto our sad news.
Should we let the man announce the news?
It's hard to say, but this is my last show as a full member of the team.
As a regular presenter?
Yeah, I'm sure I'll be back for, you know.
Kind of half a job presenter, really, isn't it?
Yeah. it's too late to step back, so yes, I am leaving the show with a very heavy heart, and I'm very sad to do it.
Even heavier testicles.
Yeah, yeah. I'll very much miss being part of the show on a regular basis. And also I'll miss my good buddies here.
Matt will be gone but not forgotten though.
Yeah, I'll be back from time to time, I'm sure. And the reasons are really just that I want to try doing some other things. And I only have so many hours in a day, so you know, I'm now becoming quite dull in this speech.
Well, you've got a newborn kid. You're nearly a councillor.
No, I have a failed political career.
There is one.
You have a failed political career.
There is one upside to Matt leaving. What's I have
that?
To say, no risk of a political special happening. No.
you were there. You were there.
When he said this is hard to say, I thought he was then going to go.
Supercalifragilistic.
He was going to say, I'll leave the show, but in Swahili, you know.
Peter picked a pickled pepper.
Red lorry, yellow lorry.
Right, so
we're going to miss the international language skills of Matthew
Revelle. We are.
Yeah. Matt's brought an awful lot to the show.
And now he's taking it all away again.
I've been worried we're going to have nothing.
I'm not really sure. I mean, obviously it's a big decision for me because it's been a big part of my life. And I'm not really sure it's the right decision, but it's the one I've made, so there you go.
So now you're fucking lumpy.
Yeah. I've made my bed, so I'm going to lie in it now, and perhaps murder my replacement so I can come back.
All we can realistically say is
that Opus or street fighting?
So, replacement-wise...
Yeah, goodbye and you'll be missed.
You will be missed.
So catch you later.
Do you have any suggestions as to a replacement?
Matt slowly slides the mic away. Gets up, gives us the thing, and fucks off.
Well, to my mind, there is only one man who can replace me.
But he's not available.
So thanks, Chris Proctor. But we went with the second choice.
It's
not true at all, by the way.
If you were into watching British indie films back in the late 90s, you may well already be familiar with this man's work.
Really?
Yes. This is bassist extraordinaire, computer scientist, technical director, Adam
and
Sweet.
Sultan of Love.
Sultan of Love, Adam Sweet.
Adam Sweet.
He is the Sultan of Love.
Yes, one man's misery is another man's gain. Thank you very much, Matthew Revelle. I am the fucking man.
Welcome aboard, Adam.
Welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard.
Be pleased. Sweet.
I was all set to be really nice about Matt then, and it all got really sour at the end. I thought, right, well, thanks. Fuck you. It's been
long. <time. laughs> Don't let the door bang you on the way out.
Hang on. Is this the bit where we tell Adam that he was selected on a 2-1 majority vote? And then not tell him who said no. No, no. Adam was our obvious choice to replace it.
It makes a great cup of tea.
It was first time ever, actually.
The last. So we should... Should we give him a job interview?
Hey, that'd be wicked. No, why do you think you're suitable to replace Matt Revelle?
You know what?
Because you're 4'8" tall.
As I said, I was going to be nice about Matt, and I think I probably still ought to be. I think.
But fuck, he's nice.
Matt's been a fantastic presenter, and I think it's going to be really fucking hard to replace him, actually. And I don't think even I will do it that well. Not maybe as well as Matt did.
I don't think we should have him chat.
We don't have much confidence either.
Speak yourself up a bit.
So it's possibly the worst job interview I've ever done, actually.
You've got the job.
Yeah, I think the reason why I should replace Matt is, first of all, because I live about 5 minutes down the road.
Oldest and least honourable of reasons why you get a replacement, you were available.
Do you get tired quite a lot?
I do get tired a hell of a lot.
Are you interested in marketing?
I do.
Not in the slightest.
You're going to show up to most of the shows?
Probably.
bad replacement for Revelle.
Have you got some kind of, can you do impressions? Have you got ridiculous party tricks? Can you do the...
no, I can't do that.
Any foreign language skills?
Huh?
But is it?
Yeah, can you... reach supersonic...
I'm quite good at retching at Jono's gastric fumes.
That's a very important part of the role. Yeah.
It is. I think we hire him. What do you reckon, chaps?
Absolutely.
All those in favour?
I am.
Yeah, whatever.
You were the one, weren't you?
Welcome to the show, Adam Sweet.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. So, just to kind of naturally, you know, Revelle is still here.
Sitting in the corner crying his eyes out that we don't seem even remotely bothered that he's leaving. But, yes, we
should, you know, I've scoured through hours and hours of Revelle footage.
You have.
And there's about 25 seconds of content. So should we listen to some of Matt's best bits and bid him au revoir?
Yep. Au revoir, Matthew.
Au revoir, Matthew.
P. Revelle.
And we'll be back in the next show with Sweet in tow.
As a permanent member of the team.
Thank you very much. And remember, vote Revelle.
Woo!
Woohoo! I was smoking a pipe.
I just want to touch the phone.
I just want to answer the phone. Now, come on.
Touch the phone sounds like a new Channel 5 quiz show, doesn't it? Touch the phone. Google some others to have them. I'm not that way inclined.
In the category for podcasts even Jesus would like, Log Radio is the winner. Down, Jono, Stuart, Aid and Matthew. Do your wonderful collection ceremony.
I've got a suggestion.
Matthew opens his third eye.
There's a Tony Blair to it. As I understand it, and with a very small amount of understanding admittedly as it is that Log people radio. Come along and I'll call it the Jeff's Public License. The point is that you are concerned, or perhaps slightly, slightly
concerned.
Did you want
to spit when you said that, by the way?
You what?
Did you want to spit when you said that?
Spit?
Yeah. Red hat.
Red hat. Oh, shut up. Fucking bald twat. if you want to send in your reviews, we'll probably ignore them. Do you think there's one that's got like a really glitzy rhinestone collar and it's called Free Spire? Just out of interest, everyone, I just thought I'd like to know that we're doing Log Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I knew I was here for something.
No, it's a replacement for the winter times when it's too cold for the vicar jacket.
That always works. Oops.
Let's hear Sweeney.
The Sweeney. The Sweeney.
Me.
/ me waits for inspiration.
The Sweeney, the Sweeney.
He's weenie. He's weenie. Ba 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 ba. Coronation Street.
I'm glad he's going. I think we can that.
Yes.